It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Sheree and Peter. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, aka the affable CPG guy. My domain experience revolves around digital shelf content, retail, customer data, insight, CRM, and loyalty. Boy, do I know stuff. Anyhow, my co-host, he's the cerebral CPG guy and an expert at branding, direct-to-consumer, unified commerce, retail media, and marketplaces. So please join me in welcoming the man known by one name, Sheree. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Peter. Sorry, Bill, I don't know, but week over week, it's a pleasure doing this with you.
Hey, Sheree, by the time this airs, the Yankees will have played their spring training home opener against the Jays. They will have lost, and they'll, strangely enough, be mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. Are you okay with that so far?
I'm more worried about the legacy of what happens when you win only one world championship and you talk too much versus 28.
Before we get to our guest today, I want to remind our audience that all of our content, including our profitability series, our women leadership series, our ongoing founder series in Q1 of this year, You can get to that by just going to cpgguys.com. And as you know, our content is audience driven. So please give us your feedback. The easiest way to do that is to go to ratethispodcast.com/cpgguys and just leave feedback on the Apple platform. Very easy. And we really greatly appreciate the direction you give us. It helps us make sure that we invite on very interesting guests like the one we have today. I think our audience knows that in a post-pandemic world, direct consumer for brands is absolutely non-negotiable. I know Sheree and I certainly agree on that. The effort to build a meaningful direct-to-consumer operation can be very challenging and sometimes even out of reach for a lot of brands, or at least they perceive so. And the reason may be many. It could be thousands of distribution points are a challenge, P&L dilution due to price points or lack of retail experience. And we've come across a solution that actually cuts through a lot of these problems and enables a very effective D2C solution for many brands. Therefore, we've launched this great three-part series. It's a partnership with the team at Shoppable. And they have developed a very compelling multi-retailer checkout solution that enables brands to get all of the benefits from a 1P relationship, particularly around the data points, right? Without all of the headaches that are associated with the back-end supply chain and fulfillment. What we like about this is with Shoppable, we believe brands can achieve a D2C-like experience with a very light platform and low implementation and capital expenditure costs. So it's very, very interesting. So our guest today in the second part of this series is the founder and CEO of Shoppable. She started her career in client success, working at notable companies like Ralph Lauren and Monster Worldwide. God, I remember that. Boy, I remember their office in Connecticut when I was working up in the Norwalk area. But in any event, a decade ago, she founded Shoppable, which, as I said, is a distributed commerce technology company that has a suite of e-commerce products that surrounding Shoppable's universal checkout API, I believe that's patented actually, which enables the creation of both Shoppable websites and, interesting, because I know Sheree likes this, ads as well. So it's pretty fascinating. They have some impressive integration partners. We're going to get to that a little bit. And really some incredible brand clients that one of Heather's colleagues, Holly, talked to us about in episode one of this series. So please join me in welcoming Heather Marie Udo. Heather, welcome. How you doing?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
That's great. And before we get to the questions, could you give our audience a quick summary of Shoppable's business? And right before that, because we know a lot of them like to multitask while they're listening to podcasts, can you tell them where they can find Shoppable on the web?
Yeah, absolutely. So very easy domain. We are shoppable.com. Quick preview of what we are is Shoppable's powers multi-retailer checkout experiences for publishers, CPGs, and advertisers. You know, we work with a lot of large companies. People probably heard of like Revlon and GSK and Mars Wrigley, to name a few.
That's outstanding. So thank you very much for that. Sheree and I, we formed this partnership with you because we were so absolutely intrigued about the value proposition that you offered to so many brands that thought D2C was out of reach. So we really want to dig in today. We had some great interaction, as we said. Make sure our audience checks out part one of the series with Holly Bonney. But let's get right to the questions today. You know, we're running a Founders Month in, or a Founders Quarter in the first quarter of 2021. So you being here is also not only as part of the arc of conversation with Shoppable, but as a founder. We want to understand a little bit about that founder's journey of how you founded this a decade ago, and what gap in the industry were you seeking to address?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started Shoppable because I wanted it to exist as a consumer. And, you know, I was at a time in my life where I was moving into my first apartment where I was going to get to live alone, but that also meant that I had to furnish it all by myself. And in that process, I was, I didn't know how to put together all of the different pieces to furnish it. So I was, I didn't want to start my journey on retailers' websites. I wanted to start in, you know, publishing websites and in content and seek inspiration. And, you know, the problem was, you know, not in finding, you know, beautiful, amazing, perfect products that I wanted to buy. The problem was actually being able to buy them. So as soon as you discover something on, you know, any type of content website outside of that retailer site, the next thing is, okay, where can I purchase this? And I kid you not, I probably, you know, spent 40 minutes in Google for multiple different products, trying to track down, describe the product, who made it, you know, or trying to guess what retailer maybe carried a product, and, you know, go through each section of their website. And it was, you know, just a horrible consumer experience. And one that led me to, you know, oftentimes not purchase the products that I wanted to because of that type of experience. So, you know, the aha moment was, you know, after multiple of these experiences, I have my credit card next to my keyboard and I'm trying to find a product. And I just sat there and I said, I feel like the retailers don't want my money. And, you know, obviously it's one of those moments where we all have where you kind of talk to yourself. You're like, okay, obviously they do. So, you know, then the next thing is, so what's going on? Like, why is this process so broken? You know, if this product is sitting in a warehouse someplace and somebody's offering it for sale, why am I as a buyer not able to find it? And why can't we find each other? So it became obvious in that moment. And the more I just went down the rabbit hole, you know, from putting my entrepreneur hat on and seeing like, okay, seems like a really big problem. It was obvious that there was a technology challenge because there's no one retailer that could solve this and no one, you know, publisher or brand that could solve it. And it really needed to be some new technology. And that's really what led me to starting Shoppable and, you know, realizing that, you know, we could essentially, you know, we don't need to be a retailer ourselves. We don't want to be, but we can partner with all the major retailers out there and create these Shoppable experiences, bringing their products to everywhere that consumers discover them and enabling them to, you know, essentially buy them wherever they're discovering.
Heather, first of all, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you chatting with us about D2C and the checkout experiences. And it's fascinating to hear your own and how Shoppable was actually founded and how the idea came to you. Peter's already referred to in episode one, just to remind our audience once more, this is a three-part series, and we did episode one with Holly Bunny back on March the 4th, where we covered the intricate details of why D2C can be a challenge for consumers. But listening to you speak, the journey just sounds easy. You know, you had a personal shortcoming you noticed on retail websites. You decided to attack the gap and make changes there, and actually you ended up actually creating a product and a technology-based product, and you've obviously been extremely successful with Shoppable. But I'm sure, as Peter, as I know in our own experiences, the journey to success comes with a lot of failures in between. Can you share for our audience how that journey, decade-long journey was? Was it a bed of roses? Were there thorns along the way? What did you personally learn, and how did you adapt in your own life to meet those challenges?
Oh, wow. Big questions. There's a lot of different parts to this, but, you know, in all, it's been, you know, it's an amazing experience as a founder, you know, always, I've always wanted to create a profitable business from the ground up, you know, and being able to see every bit of hard work and sweat and long nights and early mornings and weekends and, you know, everything else come in, you know, come to life in the business, you know, it's really amazing to see that happen. And then with each year kind of growing, and now, you know, I still kind of at this point, you know, I'm having pinch me moments of the types of Fortune 100 companies we get to have the pleasure of working with. But it is, you know, a long journey, you know, as you kind of mentioned, and it's not it's by no means an easy process. And, for the faint-hearted, but, you know, you learn, I think you as an entrepreneur, you learn so much with your first startup and your first company that you build. There's just incredibly, you know, incredible takeaways that you can get over time. But, you know, we started when I first started it, you know, we're figuring out all the pieces. And part of it was, the first question was, is this even possible? Can you technically make this happen? And, you know, I didn't know, you know, and I had to spend, you know, a lot of time trying to figure that out. And I was not in the industry either. So a lot of people often assume that, okay, you must have had all these connections and things that you started with. And I didn't start with a single connection in the space. So that was a huge challenge in figuring that piece out. And also in understanding, you know, okay, we have a solution and there's a clear need for this, but the exact, you know, the exact details of productizing the business exactly how our customers needed it was something that had certainly evolved throughout the years. And something that, you know, I think it's always really important to listen to your customers and take that feedback to help improve your product and in business.
So if there was one big advice you could give other budding entrepreneurs and founders like yourself, would it be network like crazy?
that would be one for sure. You know, and related to that, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the key things that I think got Shoppable to where it is today is by moving the business to New York. So we're based in New York now. But, you know, I was a tech entrepreneur in San Francisco, where, you know, at the time, everyone that was starting a business was going out to San Francisco. And I was feeling like this business needs to be in New York, because it is a tech business. But, you know, if you're, kind of marketplace technology with no retail partners and no customers, you have no business. So we could have developers that are anywhere, but we needed to be where our customers and our partners were all. So, so by moving to New York and networking like crazy, going to, you know, in New York, it's a little different now because of COVID, but, when I first moved out here, and it'll come back again, New York will come back. But there were networking events every single night that you could go to, multiple different ones, and to be able to get in touch with the right people. And New York is such a great city for that. But the other big piece of advice that I would have is really to focus. I think so many founders, and I've been guilty of this, and, you know, talking about mistakes, is we all, you know, have these big visions of where we want to go, and, you know, can see so many different possibilities for what you're doing, but you've got to focus. And you've got to get really focused on, and not try to move too fast from operating, you know, at day one to trying to operate like you're at day 1,000. So I think that's a really key thing for, you know, a lot of other people to think about in the early days.
Well, in hindsight, it may be that your decision to move from California to New York was actually advantageous from a real estate cost perspective. Though enough of what the implications of COVID have been on that, I'd sure love to know, first and foremost, how the impact of COVID, particularly the tremendous and dramatic increase in e-commerce, has affected your business. And as you've talked a little bit about, Sri mentioned one kind of hack that you've done to make your business successful. Are there any other piece of advice you'd probably give some aspiring entrepreneurs as they're thinking about undertaking something, particularly in an area where they may not have domain expertise, much like what you faced?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, so in light of COVID, I would say, to answer that part of the question, I would say you really need to prepare for the unknown, you know, and also make sure that, you know, you're thinking about you yourself as a leader, and, you know, whether, you know, it's a leader within a larger corporation or you yourself as a leader as a, you know, a CEO and founder, and thinking, always trying to think about ways that you, you know, you can adapt for what's going on around you, and being able to step back from, you know, how things have always been, which I know is, you know, can be really challenging. And I think that's more challenging probably the more domain expertise you have, because you just get really used to that's how things are. That's how everybody else does it. But, you know, I think what COVID has obviously had massive impacts on a lot of different types of businesses. A lot of businesses don't exist anymore because of it, but it is for, you know, the ones that were able to make it through. It was an opportunity, I think, that took everyone out of the day-to-day and the opportunity to really kind of reevaluate all of the different aspects of your business and, you know, see it from a new perspective. So I think that, you know, for us, it was certainly, you know, it was certainly really good for us to be able to step back and just be able to see it from a new point of view, which is, you know, working from home and as a, you know, with a lot of other things. But yeah, it's really helpful to be able to see from a new point of view and just make sure you're always being adaptable, you know, and prepared for the unknown, because you just, no one expected, you know, expected COVID to happen.
Heather, we'd love to learn how you went about creating retail partnerships, and we'd love to also learn who are your retail partners, and then what feedback have you gotten from retailers on Shoppable? Do they like the product? Do they, of course, this is extra business for them, so I'm going to find it hard-pressed to believe they don't like it, but what's the feedback you're getting back, and who are your partners, and how did you go about this process?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, from the initial process, I'm not going to lie, getting, you know, partnerships with some of the biggest retailers and name brands in the country was definitely not easy. You know, especially, like I said, going into it without having any connection. So having to network to get there. But, you know, like all marketplaces, we had an initial chicken and egg challenge to solve. And back when I was still living in San Francisco, I, you know, was after many, many emails and in the early days of LinkedIn messaging, which now I know everyone gets a bunch of messages, but I was able to essentially cold call and set up meetings with companies like Saks Fifth Avenue and Bloomingdale's and Ralph Lauren in New York. So I flew out to New York, pitched them on the idea, and, you know, at first kind of general, you know, general feedback was, okay, we just don't operate like that. We don't, you know, we just don't do that. And, you know, like I was kind of saying earlier, you know, obviously this technology never existed before. So I said, yeah, you're right. No one has. And then I had everybody really put their consumer hat on, like take off your retailer hat, which is like, this is the way things are, put on your consumer hat, and then walk them through, you know, the problems from a consumer standpoint, and, you know, was able to convince our first few retail partners to, you know, to try it out. So that's how I was able to kind of get over that first hump of, okay, this sounds really, you know, interesting, but we don't do it, to, okay, well, we'll try this out. And that was really, you know, enough for us to be able to, put together the technology, be able to test out our checkout technology. And then, you know, we were able to secure our launch partner, which also allowed us to obviously start picking up a lot more traction as soon as other retailers saw it live and, you know, they could see it come to life. It became a lot more obvious what, you know, the power of the technology and the benefits to them. So to the other part of your question, we work with a lot of different types of retailers today, but just to name a few, you know, Walmart and Target, Saks Fifth Avenue. We've also recently integrated with Best Buy. So really big, amazing retail partnerships that we're so grateful to have. You know, and then to, I think the third part of the question, essentially, like, what are, you know, what do they, you know, how do they think about it? And, you know, how retailers really see it now is that it is it's basically incremental revenue on top of what they normally get. So, you know, nothing that we do is replacing a retailer's website. There's always a time and a place where, you know, as a shopper, you need that type of experience. But we're really bringing their products directly to the consumers. And then that's allowing them to see additional revenue, build closer relationships with or close new customers. And then I think it's really the other really important piece for and just really fascinating things that I've seen, you know, throughout the time of building the business is with product search. So when I started this business, you know, the majority of consumers, over 50% of consumers, started product search at Google. And I'm sure you guys are well aware of this, but in 2020, 63% of people started product search at Amazon. And that is just a massive hit to anybody that is not Amazon. So really, you know, what we're trying to do, you know, from a consumer standpoint is obviously make it easier for consumers to buy anything that they see. But for retailers, it's also strategic because it helps them move further up the funnel and convert earlier from that discovery standpoint.
So what I hear there, Sri, from what Heather said is that putting the consumer at the center of the journey will benefit the retailer by driving incrementality and moving them further up the funnel in terms of their ability to ultimately convert that consumer. So that's a really compelling message to retailers about why they should be part of your network of integrations. In our analysis of Shoppable, correct me if I'm wrong, but you started working with publishers when you first launched. Is that true? And when did you really start working with the actual consumer packaged goods companies? And are they seeing this as a full direct-to-consumer like solution?
Yeah. So great question. So it was a really a natural evolution. We did launch initially within the publishing space, and I was then nominated for an award with L'Oreal's Women in Digital program. And as part of which I won, which I guess is a key thing here. As part of that, I won, the business won a contract with L'Oreal. And that was really a key turning point. And, you know, I think Rachel Weiss and, you know, everyone at L'Oreal for giving us that opportunity. But it was a great, a really interesting opportunity for us to kind of see a different perspective, see our technology from another perspective. And they started using it within content sites, you know, branded content sites. And, you know, and then from that point, while I was speaking at at an L2 event, I can't name who, but one of the largest CPG companies was sitting in the audience and said, can this technology, like I know you're working on a lot of content sites, but can the exact same technology work for a brand site? And I said, absolutely. So I, you know, then we started, that really was that new market for us when we started working directly with the CPGs and really understanding, you know, how big the need was in that space. And, you know, in particular, just the complexity for the traditional CPGs in, considering e-commerce and, you know, the different options that were out there. So I had, while solving my own consumer problem, I'd unknowingly also solved this problem for CPG. So that's really how we started getting into the CPG market and expanding into this space as well.
Congratulations on all the success you've had and bringing on retailers as well as brands. Thank you for the stories of how you actually enabled the first two. It's heartwarming to hear how a founder had to go about that process. You know, where I'd like to focus next, Heather, is with your success, you've had the need for scale. So how did you scale the tech solution over time as you made this transition from California to New York? And then could you take us through what features Shoppable specifically has?
So, I mean, from a technical perspective, I'll answer that one first because I guess that's where my mind goes as a tech CEO. But from a technical perspective, it's really that the platform was built to be scaled. So it was built to be licensed out to a variety of different types of technologies or websites, I should say. One challenge that we've seen as we've grown is being able to handle and normalize the SKU process. When you're combining so many different products from all these different retailers, we now have around 100 million SKUs from all these different retail partners. So if you're bringing in over 100, SKUs of data, and refreshing that data multiple times a day, you run into a lot of tech challenges. So that's one thing that we've had to solve for on a tech side, to be able to scale that and be able to bring that many SKUs out to other people. And then on the distribution side, a lot of it has had to do with, one by one proving ourselves with each of these new partners. So a lot of our customers are not single customers because we work with multiple different sites or multiple different brands across their portfolio. So we grow with our customers. And that has really helped us scale and trying to, and with that, we try to provide great service and, improve ourselves from day one with each of our partners so that we can scale with them as they're moving more and more into e-commerce and rolling these out.
Let's talk about the suitability of Shoppable for different types of brands. Are there particular categories or types that are more inclined to say Shoppable is the right? And I guess conversely, if you think, are there some that are, it's a little more challenging to build a solution for
it? So the way we think about it today, specifically in the CPG space, is by perishable and non-perishable. Anything in the non-perishable space is what we're delivering on today. We have partners from personal care, beauty, pet care, non-perishable foods, if I didn't mention that one. We don't touch perishables today. And it's something that we hope to be able to in the future. But what we've seen is just delivery and checkout systems. It adds another layer of complexity because you have to obviously book a delivery time and the functionalities of it operate differently than our technology today. So that's a piece of the market that we're not currently solving for today, but anything non-perishable we're working with.
So just a quick follow-on before Sri takes the last one. So then when you talk about your integration with Walmart.com as an example, your integration is with the traditional Walmart.com box and ship operation. It's not the pickup and delivery grocery business, correct?
That's right.
Okay, good.
So I want to go back to a previous question, Heather, which is, are there any specific features of Shoppable you want to point out for our audience?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of different features, but I would say one that we didn't really touch on is the checkout itself. When I know we kind of glazed over it, but one of the aha moments that our customers have is one, being able to have that checkout live on their own site, but them not having to be the merchant of record. So our retail partners are able to remain merchant of record and they're also able to handle all the customer service, the returns, all of that information, all of that process that are, typically CPGs don't want to be getting into that space. So and our retail partners are great at it. And it also, by that type of setup, it also makes it really easy for, back to making it easy for consumers. But the checkout piece, one of the other features is that it is multi-retailer. So where, you know, I know a lot of consumers that are going to CPG sites today, especially in COVID when there were, you know, massive inventory shortages and everyone's trying to locate certain products. You know, you might come across one product, and if it's not powered by Shoppable, you click and redirect to one website out of stock, you click and redirect to another website out of stock, and then you go to another product and it's available at different places. And it's just a really fragmented shopping experience without the technology. But with Shoppable's technology, you know, the sites we power, the shoppers are able to build a basket and check out, even if the products are coming from, you know, two or three different retailers. Most consumers check out from one or two retailers in a typical shopping experience, but that feature allows them to only fill out their information once. So you're not having to input all of that data multiple times, which we all hate, especially on mobile.
I'm just going to point out for the benefit of our audience, again, one of the statements you made, Heather, which is one of the biggest advantages of Shoppable is that it solves a major issue for scale brands and when it comes to D2C, which is answering the question, who's the merchant of record? And you have found a way through Shoppable, which is like the number one feature of Shoppable, is the merchant of record stays with the retailer. That is a huge pain point, frustration point, alleviation for brands. Like in my own P&L journeys that I've had in the past, that single comment alone could be a game changer. And I want to point that out. But let's jump to data and insights. Another large reason, Peter, and I hear from our industry peers and associates is people usually get into D2C to establish a one-on-one relationship with the consumer to collect data and then use that data to perhaps inform their innovation portfolio and build an even stronger loyalty relationship with the consumer. So I'd love to know, does the Shoppable platform actually collect data, work towards collecting it, and then helping your clients, aka brands, harness it, or even the retailer for that matter?
100%, Elvio. What you're saying is 100% what we hear as well. So our, you know, our customers, especially the CPG space, come to us because of that differentiating factor, and because by adding that checkout experience, they're able to gather that customer information and build a direct relationship with the customer. So anything, you know, and that means everything but learning exactly who their customers are, who's buying their products, what, you know, analytics around what, you know, what they're buying together, you know, price points, are they always buying shampoo and not the conditioner, you know, all of those types of interesting insights are so valuable to them and into their business. But it also, you know, we're also seeing them use it to be able to optimize and expand their media, because when you are able to control that checkout experience, you now have insight into the full conversion funnel. And, you know, this was something, again, I was not in the industry. So this was something that was just so surprising to me when I first started working with CPGs, you know, just how much, how many media dollars were going out without understanding really who the actual customer is and having that first party data. And, you know, and today we're working with a lot of the biggest ad platform companies in partnership with our CPGs so that they can optimize the media for our CPG partners. So they're leveraging the data in that way in real time, in addition to the customer aspect that, that we mentioned. And so it's really, once you add that checkout, it makes such a big difference. And just transforming the data and analytics that we're able to provide.
I want to remind our audience that the links to all of the audio platforms that cover our podcast, our YouTube video channel, and every other piece of content that we've produced, it's all available free. You just go to cpgguys.com. And don't forget to give us your feedback on ratethispodcast.com/cpgguys. Heather Marie Udo, we want to thank you greatly for joining us in part two of this three-part series with Shoppable. This is very intriguing. I'd also like to remind our guests that they should check out Shoppable's YouTube channel. There's some really great videos there on the background of how this works and some demos that you can look before you reach out to Heather and her team. But Heather, can you remind our audience where they can find you all on the web?
Yep, where you can find us at shoppable.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Heather. This has been terrific.
Thank you guys for having me.
Sree, wow, can't wait for part three of this series. This has been really interesting. I got to say, if you're a non-perishable brand and you're struggling with thinking about how you're going to get into D2C, I would have to give this an absolute thorough examination as a viable option.
Thank you, Heather, first of all, for joining us. It's been a pleasure. You know, as part one, we discussed the importance of D2C. Part two with you, the founder, we've discussed more around your experiences as a founder. But to me, the most profound statement still stands very clearly in this conversation with you. Brands do not have to be the merchant of record when it comes to Shoppable. And that alone, to me, makes it extremely attractive for brands who want to enter the D2C business. Peter, always a pleasure doing this week over week with you. I can't wait for part three, which promises a conversation, Heather, if I'm right, with an actual client of yours and how they use Shoppable.
So everyone, please join us next week for part three, and we look forward to speaking with you on the next episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Goodbye. The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.